Search your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien. Iwo Jima, Cambodia, Beirut, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast. Look at the Predator film series. Join Garrett.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
Adam.
You son of a bitch.
And Matt.
How'd you snag a ticket on this shitmobile?
As they get themselves to the analysis chopper and review each Predator film not yet covered here at Percolated Media.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
If you would like to hear the co-host views on the Alien vs. Predator films and Prey, check out our Percolated Media archives as the films were reviewed back in 2022.
This is getting better minute.
So stick around, podcast listeners.
Guess who's back?
The Percolated Media Predator Retrospective begins now.
Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
Predators, released July 9, 2010. Budget on this was $40 million. Box office, $127.2 million. And this is directed by Nimrod Antel. All right, so before people start jumping down our throats saying, well, you guys reviewed Predator 2, but now you're jumping to Predators. You know, you guys do know there were two in between, right? Go back to our first year in existence. In the lead up to Prey, we did review Alien vs. Predator, both of those films. And I was not going to force these guys to watch those films again. So want to hear our thoughts, go back to that. But here we are, guys. We are, what, almost 20 years removed from Predator 2, and here we get Predators. Adam, as the big Predator fan, what were you expecting with this, sir?
I was so happy there was a new Predator movie coming out. When I heard that Robert Rodriguez was involved, I was extremely excited, but then I heard he pulled out of directing it, which made me less excited. And then when I saw the title, I was like, ooh, well, that's freaking just... It made me feel like it was stealing from another franchise, because that is as blatant as you could possibly get. But I was so happy that we were getting a big screen Predator continuation. And other than seeing the initial like TV spot, I stayed clear of every bit of marketing. There was nothing I wanted to know about this movie until I sat in a theater. This is one of the only times that I went in as clean as I could be about knowing anything about a film, was when I sat down to see Predators. Because I hadn't gotten a Predator movie since I was 12 years old. So I was as excited as you could possibly be. And remember, I'm the one that liked, if you could call it that, Alien versus Predator, the first one. Don't, I'm not talking about AVP Rectum. Like, that first one, I enjoy for what it is, but I fucking love the Predator, and I could not wait and couldn't believe we were finally getting one.
The one thing that sold me on this was in the trailer, they have all these Predator sights right on Adrian Brody at the same time, and I was like, oh shit, this looks like it's going to be good. So I was kind of excited as well. Matt, what about you?
I was apathetic, and the reason I say that is twofold. Ironically, Predator 2, I don't care for. And the AVP movies, spinoffs or not, soured me on a return to this property, because I felt like they were one for four, and there was really nothing they could do to excite me outside of either a full-fledged reboot or getting someone involved with the first one to come back, which ironically we'll talk about with next week's movie. I also didn't care. The Rodriguez factor, I'm indifferent to Robert Rodriguez. He's made some stuff I've liked. He's made some stuff I hate. I sort of feel about him the way I feel about Kevin Smith, where I like listening to him talk. I like his interviews. I think he's very knowledgeable. But I, unlike Kevin Smith, who I think is a better writer than he is a director, I think Rodriguez is actually a better director than he is a writer. So him directing this would have at least intrigued me because he's a it's a name to kind of sell me on the movie, because at least he has a very particular style, and he had been involved for as long but had pulled out at the last second. And that's on the marketing really excited me. So I kind of went in, I'll see it when it comes out. And I did. So there's that.
The day that we do the Robert Rodriguez El Mariachi trilogy will be a interesting go.
Still haven't seen the one that Johnny Depp is in. Never seen that one. You know, when it comes to Robert Rodriguez, I'm similar to Matt, where I compare him to Rob Zombie in that I would love to sit down and talk horror movies, or in Robert Rodriguez's case, movies in general, with the guy for hours, but I would not want to sit through one of his films. I'm exactly like him, where the directing is pretty good, but somehow, some way, I'm just not that akin to his writing style. I just don't know if he knows how to flesh out characters.
It's hard for me to disagree. And I think you're both the same way. Like, I do think there's something about somebody that does have a passion for film that you're willing to give them some runway.
Yeah, for sure. Now, this was a movie, I saw this when it was released, except I saw it at the drive-in. And I saw it with the most toxic ex I've ever had. And we went in her red pickup truck, and we brought a whole ice chest full of beer. So I don't really remember that screening too much. It's hard to really get into a drive-in movie for me. I don't know. I need the sound to surround me. And I was just kind of, it washed over me. I was like, oh, that's weird. And the weird thing is, every single time, including this time, that I have sat down to watch this movie, I have fallen asleep. Don't know what it is. I had to go back a couple times and catch up on my notes. And we'll talk about, you know, whether that's because I was bored or what, but I have a hard time staying awake through this thing. Adam, is this one you've returned to over the years?
I've seen it a few times. There's definitely other movies in this series that I've seen more. Well, duh, because of Predator. And there's a movie in this series that I've never finished. But I've seen it more than almost any other movie, but I've never finished it. I'll let you figure out what that is if you've listened to this series by the time we've gotten here.
Let's talk about the origins of this. Now, Rodriguez did, in the midst of making Desperado, he did approach the studio with a draft of an idea he had, which ended up becoming this movie. He brought it to them. They liked it, but they kind of put it on the back burner for a while because they didn't really know if Predator would be profitable again. And the comics had come out, and then AVP had come out. And by the time AVP Requiem had come out, they were like, okay, let's see what you got. And apparently he had Dutch written in to be replaced by a character we'll talk about. And instead of directing, because he had other things going on at that time, he brought in this Nimrod Antel, who the only thing I'd really seen before this was a pretty good movie. I remember it being good. I haven't seen it since. It's called Vacancy. Matt, were you familiar with this guy before he directed this?
Yeah, I saw Vacancy. I thought it was enjoyable for the kind of B-movie thriller it is. But I didn't see giving him Predator. And you know, Rodriguez talked so much about this being his property and, you know, trying to make this for 15 years. But you couldn't direct the damn thing yourself. You couldn't put Spy Kids away for long enough to make this come to fruition. So that made me lose a certain amount of confidence that the person who was spearheading this took a step back in favor of making that fucking Machete movie. Which also made no sense because Grindhouse bombed, but I'm gonna make a movie that was literally a trailer in Grindhouse.
Adam, I mean, you were really looking forward to this. Were you familiar with this director's work before you saw it?
No, not at all. And I think he's done some okay stuff. The episodes of Stranger Things that he directed, I thought were good. Mm-hmm. So I think he's capable, and I'm gonna use that in lowercase capital capable, but. No, I had no idea. And I just can't help but laugh when you got a director named Nimrod out there. I mean, look, with some of the sequels we get between both of these franchises, Predator and Aliens, I guess that's fucking apropos. No, he was new to me, and I didn't care. And this movie didn't care. Like, it was produced by Robert Rodriguez. That's what they sold this shit on.
Yeah, his name was all over this. It might as well have been directed by him. Now, Matt, you mentioned last week that the title turned you off. Was it just because of the allusion to aliens? Is that why?
First and foremost, yeah. I mean, how can you not put that connection together? I mean, you had already done the crossover. Now you're, by osmosis, trying to have that. But they're also trying the double meaning because, you know, there are multiple predators in this movie. But I'm also not a fan of, like, nobody has been able to recapture aliens. Not even its mother franchise. And I've always been bothered that Alien was always... they got directors with clear styles and visions to basically make the same movie four times. And then Prometheus being its own thing, but getting Renny Harlin and Nimrod Atal, I'm like, okay, you're the first one, you had John McTiernan, who really is responsible for elevating that movie to what it is. Now you're just getting guys who know where to point the camera and shoot, unlike Alien, which are very distinctive.
All right. So unless anybody has anything else to say, I want to go ahead and jump into this plot.
Or you mean fall into this plot?
Yeah, fall into this plot.
Dive in, if you will.
We start off with the 20th Century Fox logo and fanfare, as well as that of Troublemaker Studios, as the first shot we see is that of Adrian Brody's character that we're going to eventually know as Royce, although not until the very end, seemingly wake up in a free fall. Now, we see no one else at first, and Royce's parachute opens, and he lands right in the jungle as the title card is displayed. All right, let's get this out of the way right away. Adrian Brody, weird choice. He had won an Oscar at this point. Always good in supporting roles, but when he's in the lead, I don't know if he can carry a film. And that was my shortcoming coming into this, was could he carry this? I'll talk about whether I feel he can or can't. But Matt, what'd you think of Adrian Brody in this role of Royce?
I didn't see it when it was announced, because Adrian Brody, I think, is a great actor. I mean, you can't say the guy doesn't know how to lead a movie, considering he just won Best Actor for a movie that was 3+ hours long.
Yeah, that's true.
But as far as this role, this kind of reminded me of when they got Christian Bale for Terminator Salvation, where it's, you know, we want a highly respected actor to kind of rejuvenate one of these action sequels. But I didn't see it. Like, he doesn't have the build. He doesn't have the presence that I associate with being an action star, which, you know, Christian Bale had that in his bag already when he did Terminator, because he had played Batman. This was a weird choice when I heard it from announcement.
Yeah, I guess he worked his ass off. I mean, he is in good shape, but I don't know if they're trying to make him Arnold or not. It's really weird. I'm like, yeah, you're in good shape, but you're not Arnold. Let's go to the fan. Adam, what'd you feel about Adrian Brody in this, sir?
Felt that he's not Arnold, but I thought that the, you know, they're kind of trying to shift away from that. I felt like they were trying to go away from the machismo, this is the military guy that never looks like the military guy, which is what we have with Predator, everybody in that movie. So I understand it. He is your more prototypical military looking person, but also it's Adrian Brody. No, I think everybody had that feeling of this guy, really? But I feel that, and I'll say it here, with everybody on this team is kind of a, really? This person? Is this supposed to be believable? And that doesn't help, but I think it's a shift away from the ultra macho type of film that we got with the first one and more in line with what we have with Predator 2.
So Roy starts to get his bearings as we see Danny Trejo's Cuchillo. He falls and just says, fuck you, over and over. And then we see this character of Nikolai. He's shooting the Gatling gun that Jesse Ventura had, and Royce comes up to say, please stop doing that. Nikolai introduces himself.
Go ahead. I said that too at the theater 5 minutes in, because I'm like, all right, enough with the callbacks. And then this movie said fuck you for most of it.
It doesn't double down. It quadruples down on that.
Well, I will say, not knowing anything going in, and when I can still remember seeing this in about a half full movie theater on opening weekend, you know, so it was a decent crowd. That whole opening of watching the falling, you know, and having that, and then getting the credit, all of us looked around and went, what the fuck? Like, it, you knew you were getting something different. And as soon as we get to this freaking Gatling gun, that doing something different kind of went out the window. I could not believe that's the callback. And to put it on some Russian Spetsnaz guy just is almost it. Eye rolling.
I worked with this guy on an independent film a number of years later, and I got some stories from this set, but he's a really nice guy, but he just has zero presence, this Russian guy. He has this gun, and that's his character. Which, granted, that was Jesse Ventura as well, but Jesse Ventura at least had some charisma. This guy has zero charisma.
I feel that way about all of these characters.
Yeah.
They are diverse in background and ethnicity, but they're all one-note characters.
They are Fox casted.
Well, there's one that Fox didn't want to cast. Rodriguez had to fight for him, but we'll get to that. So Nikolai introduces himself and says that there was a light. He woke up and he was falling. He asks where they are, and Royce points at Alice Braga and says maybe she knows. So she says that she's never seen this jungle and that it is too hot for this time of year. So right away,
they forget global warming is a thing.
Yeah. They head off as they're approached by Hanzo, who takes off his shoes, which is his character trait, and Alice Braga's character of Isabel. Her and Royce, they both say that they woke up in free fall, and he says that he's not exactly in the service, and we see a fight between Stans, played by Walton Goggins, and Mombasa, played by, I can't believe we're going back to this guy, Mahershala Ali. He's back on the 3 Men in Retrospective podcast.
I never thought a Predator movie would have two actors in it who both have won 2 Oscars apiece.
Insane. And Walton Goggins was the one that they had to fight for. The studio did not want him, but they fought and fought. And I think he's kind of a highlight here, but as we've already mentioned, it's not really much of a character. But how do we feel about all of these actors in these roles?
On the surface, I understand what they're doing, because you're taking the makeup of that commando team that was put together in the first one, and you're doing the complete inverse of it. So I get it, but I don't understand most of them. I don't understand how most of them would be captured. Are you going into San Quentin to pull out one prisoner? Because he's in his fucking, he's actually in his prison oranges, so that makes no sense. Just wait till we get to Topher Grace.
Oh yeah,
so
he's my next one.
So half of these, just on the surface, I don't understand the how, the what, the why, and it gets more convoluted as we go on. Other than that, look, it's a video game script is kind of what I feel. And for that, I can go along with it, because I just want to see fucking predators and humans go at it in the jungle. And I get that. But then you try to be slick by getting in people like Mombasa. It's amazing that Mahershala Ali, which I've seen in so many things, you go halfway through this movie before you even really realize it's Mahershala Ali. I don't know why he looks a little different from himself, but he does. But between him and Hanzo, they try to be cute and they don't pull it off.
It's funny, too, seeing Ali in interviews when this was coming out. He was the most excited out of all of them to be in a Predator film. Like, Predator is, like, one of his favorite movies ever. So
And I think he's done the most disservice, because I think you could have had him be Royce and had a different film. And I think he has shown it in the years since this movie. He can carry something. And you know what? I think we're more likely to get him in a Predator sequel than we ever will in a Blade film.
Good call. He would have been great as the lead here.
They're just defined by their profession. Like, there's none of those, like, distinctive character traits that make all the commandos in the first one iconic. Like, you don't have Bill Duke dry shaving with a razor. You don't have Jesse Ventura making nonsensical comments. You don't have Hawkins with the pussy jokes. Everyone is just so freaking serious in this movie. I wish someone else got the memo, which we'll talk about in this movie, but I don't find them distinctive or memorable. They should have called this movie like the video game Predator Hunting Grounds, because I feel like I'm watching a computer simulation, and it's fine. Like, Adam touched on the premise, like the Predator is getting the most dangerous humans. Okay, Yakuza makes sense. You got an Israeli sniper, like a drug cartel leader, but then you have a death row inmate who, yeah, he's killed people, but I bet he's just, you know, random muggings. It's not like he's taking down tough competition. And then there's one coming up where I'm like, this makes no sense at all. So I don't think this movie is as fleshed out as it thinks it is. And it doesn't have those flourishes that make the first one stand out beyond its premise, both in the directing and in the characterization.
All right. So let's get to him. We then meet Edwin the Doctor, played by Topher Grace, as he's stuck in a parachute that's stuck in a tree. Guys, what was it about this guy in this set of years where they tried making him the villain in these movies? And fortunately, it didn't last that long. I think he is the weak link here. I hate Topher Grace in this movie.
I don't understand his casting at all, because that 70s show, I always thought he was the worst part.
Yeah, me too.
And that's why I don't love that show like so many people do. I defended him as Venom because, as far as like casting, you know, a dark reflection of Tobey Maguire, I can see Topher Grace totally. In this role, I get you're trying to go against type to subvert expectations for the big reveal, but none of it makes any sense, both from the Predator's perspective and from casting Topher Grace. I think he's abhorrently terrible in this. And I don't understand. I thought this was the casting Rodriguez would have to fight for, because, you know, Walton Goggins, Justified had just started. So it's not like he was a huge star, but people knew who Topher Grace was. And I don't think he's believable at all, both by pretending to be someone he's not, and then when you get the reveal later on, none of it works.
Matt pointed it out, and I think I'm going to hit it again multiple times before we finish this review. This is that character on a video game that you're like, why are they here? Oh, they got different stats because of some weird stuff. Let me choose the character. It doesn't work in the film. It doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense. And I'm going to say something, you know what, because it's going to be a while before we get to it. Not only is he a worthy Venom, he's a better Venom. I will take that Venom over the...
Well, he's more authentic to the spirit of that character.
Yeah, not only as Brock, but that Venom is a better Venom than what we got in three Tom Hardy movies, because... But, yeah, it's an interesting take, and I don't think there's any point where you don't think that there's going to be some weird third act reveal. I think that you might as well have fucking written that on the screen when he shows up.
They keep hammering, I don't know why I'm here. Like, you don't,
yeah.
you don't keep hammering that into your audience unless you're going to have some kind of payoff. But
yep.
the payoff was not, the juice was not worth the squeeze. But also, you could have removed him entirely, and I think the movie actually would have been better. Because then you're not asking those logic questions from the perspective of the Predators.
I don't hate him in this, because by the time he shows up, I already hate Walter Goggins in this film. I can't stand Goggins in this film. I think he is annoying as all shit from start to end. His over-the-topness, you know, I might as well be watching that show on HBO, but he's just, it is, he doesn't fit, and I hate every time he shows up. I've only got so much hate for different characters in this film.
Here's the problem also, who would you cast in this role?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2010, who do we have?
Well, it's funny you mentioned Venom. I would have cast Tom Hardy.
I was thinking Tom Hardy as well.
I wouldn't have picked somebody out of Death Row to show up and fight predators on an alien planet.
No, but he wasn't even on Death Row.
Yeah.
That's true. On Death Row. This is just...
Oh, yeah. That's who I mean. Yeah. No, for Topher Grace. Yeah, no. For that kind of role, I think he fits it. I just don't like that doctor. I just don't like Edwin. But he fits what that role's supposed to be, other than I don't know if I believe he's old enough to be a doctor.
Or smart enough, because I always hear Kurtwood Smith saying dumbass every time he talks.
So Edwin gets cut down as he's asking, what the fuck is going on here? They continue their trek as Stans tells Isabella that her ass is awesome. And they then find Hanzo as well as some Predator trophies. Nikolai says it's a test to see how they do under pressure. And Stans talks about stories of being put on drugs and doing behavioral experiments. Roy says last time he looked, he didn't need a parachute to get to hell, and he tells them to follow him to the high ground.
All right, I gotta say this about Brody. He is doing such a terrible Clint Eastwood impression for this whole movie with that voice. He is terrible in this movie.
I agree. I didn't think of Eastwood as much as I thought. You guys already mentioned it, but I thought of Christian Bale in Terminator Salvation. That feels like the same kind of performance.
I just can't stand people who, when they try to do the tough American voice and they can't pull it off, all they do is get a little raspy and husky, and that's their American accent throughout the entire film. Yay, Visa McDonald's.
Well, that's the problem. He sounds like Clint Eastwood for the last 30 years. Not young Clint Eastwood. And he's got Christian Bale's Batman voice in parts of this. And, you know, he's got the biggest target out of everybody with that Jimmy Durante note. I don't know how the Predators don't aim for that.
And he's, what, 35 here? Like, he should not have that raspy of voice.
And he's like, I know you worked out, but you still look skinny as hell.
Exactly.
Should have made him be in a silent film.
They continue walking as Edwin finds a poisonous plant, and Nikolai tells him thanks. He'll be sure to watch out for him. Isabella tells Royce that he could use some rest, and he refuses to give his name, as he tells her that he's not doing this with her. He's better on his own. She shows him how the water just doesn't sit still, and Roy says that the sun hasn't moved since they got here. He says he thinks they're all heavy hitters who were chosen for something. Isabella guesses that Royce is military, maybe a mercenary, as we cut to him cutting the jungle to make a path. And I read an interesting quote from Rodriguez in that he said that he wanted everybody working on this to not watch any of the other Predator films but the first one. He wanted to make this basically be the sequel that movie deserved, just take place in the jungle and everything else. But I think what he's missing are those charismatic characters.
Yeah, well, he's also missing the... By doing that, you're going to alienate the Predator 2 defenders by saying, oh, the first one's the only one that matters. And you can't also tell your cast, you know, only watch the first one and do your own thing while at the same time doing a movie that has so many references in it that it never feels like its own thing.
I mean, the thing is, the first one, all those characters were different, but you know what they were? They were a team. You feel when you're watching it, you just joined the gang, right? You're part of that squad. I don't want to be part of this squad. I don't like these people. I mean, I like some of them in a little bit, but, you know, Alice Braga's, she's, I don't know, I like her character. Danny Trejo's being Danny Trejo. But other than that, I don't like anybody. I like Mombasa. You know, he's as offensive as that name fucking sounds every time they say Mombasa. But other than that, I don't care and I don't like this team. The original team, you like everybody. Even when they're assholes and making lewd jokes, you enjoy being part of that crew. You don't enjoy these people.
Well, they also don't go to the logical extent. These people should be trying to, like, the rule, I don't have to outrun the Predator. I just have to outrun you.
I am wounding somebody right away. I'm cutting your tendon and leaving you behind.
So they find some sort of compound and they send Hanzo into it. He opens the sheet and cage and we see something that was dropped there. And they wonder what they were chosen for.
Does Robert Rodriguez only know his history from the Vietnam War? Because, like, it's like punji steaks. It's, you know, yeah. Ewok net. It's Ewok nets. Like, there's also a tremendous amount of, or a tremendous absence in creativity, both with the traps and this environment. I know it's not the Predator homeworld, which we all thought this was going to turn out to be. It's just a big game reserve, but it looks like they shot it in the woods of Vermont.
It really does.
I like the traps that the Predator set up if Dutch was here, because they're his traps. They're the traps he, between the stake, between the netting and all that, it's the stuff that he used at the end, so then it would make sense. If you can't get Dutch, you need to change up what's going on. And if this is a Predator game preserve, how about you show that they've done more than just humans? How about you get some really weird shit?
They go in further as a trap is set off, a trap similar to the one they set in the first Predator, which points to what Adam just said, that this was Dutch's trap. They scurry away and Isabel is hanging off some sort of hole and they all point their guns.
Now we have to do the thing where they all shoot into the middle of the jungle.
Yep. They turn around and see a body, and Nikolai says that they triggered a dead man's trap.
I gotta say, though, I like this idea that they are here for sport and that we are showing the Predators set them up the same way that we set up traps on Game Preserve. On surface, good idea. Execution could be done better. And I will say, you have to appreciate the alien species for, I guess, also deciding to airdrop a metric fuck ton of extra rounds for their individual weapons.
Yeah, this feels like a video game where they have the infinite ammo cheat on the whole time. Because these guys they're going through bullets. They're going through bullets like President Trump goes through cabinet members. Like,
oh my God. They see that the man is from the United States Special Forces, and Roy says that the traps weren't meant for them, and whatever it was set for got through the tripwires. Mombasa is looking at the trees as we see the Predator vision for the very first time, and Mombasa says it's nothing. They move further into the jungle and see that, well, they're not in Kansas anymore, as they say.
No, you're in Vermont.
And this is when Roy says, we're going to need a new plan.
Someone should have told that to the writers. Which is also weird that Rodriguez is not a credited screenwriter on this.
No, he's credited as story by, but not a writer.
And these two writers, I don't know their track record at all.
I don't either, and there's a reason for that. Edwin is getting a little restless and says that he wants a gun. He even wraps his hand around Mombasa's throat. They sense something else is out there as Nikolai points his Gatling gun and everybody else points theirs. And this is when we see a set of Predator dogs. Now, all right, we haven't been too positive on this, but I'll give a compliment. I thought this was kind of creative. You know, they took a design that was taken from the ship from Predator 2, and they made him into these dogs. And I find if we're going to add something to the Predator world, I like that they added these.
I think it makes sense for what we got. I mean, we use dogs to flush out game when we hunt, so I like that they're using that thought process. But I also felt that there was enough of a reference, if you know like we do, to that original Van Damme design. That the head, I mean, these are obviously on all four, so it's different, but it just harkens enough to that that I appreciate that there's some respect for that original go. And yeah, I think this is pretty sweet. And fuck, we need some action.
Yeah.
I mean, other than the opening sequence, which is about 30 seconds, we need to have something happen in this film.
For sure. This movie is starved for action, because boy, was I bored at this point.
I thought these were actually a pretty cool design. I was kind of waiting for some genuine imagination, and this was the first time I actually felt a spark of creativity. And the effects don't look... I thought they'd look a lot more rubbery going back to this, but they hold up pretty well.
They all disperse as Isabella gets her shot off right in time to save Edwin. Stans is trapped in. Mombasa saves him. Isabella gets trapped and she puts a gun to her head, but doesn't pull the trigger as the dogs are called off by some other force that they haven't seen yet. Roy says to do a shell count, but according to my colleagues, that doesn't matter in this. And they need to reload right now, and Edwin can't help but keep asking what the hell is going on. And Royce figures out that they're being hunted and they just got fleshed out by the dogs, just as Adam just pointed out. He says he knows this because that's what he would do. So of course he knows it.
This is what the script said. Yeah. So spell it out to everybody in the audience that doesn't understand what's happening.
They're hearing, "Help me," and they see that Coachella is in the distance. Roy says that it's a trap and throws a rock toward him. The rock disintegrates, and Mombasa says this is a trap that he's done himself. Stan says to leave him here, and Royce agrees. We then see Isabella aim her gun and shoot him down, but the voice is coming from another source, and we're hearing voices like we've heard in films past say, "It's a trap." Royce then says that we run, we die, and they need to know what they're dealing with. So this is how they get Danny Trejo out of this, because he had machete to film. So Rodriguez got him here for a day and said, "All right, go to my set."
I wasn't expecting him to be killed off. I think it's a decent reference to the mimicking that we've seen in two other films. And I wasn't expecting it. So pretty cool little, it's a bird call, right? It's a duck call. So, you know, it's not badly done. It's not, it's just there. Like, yeah. It's tough. I'm like, do I love it? No. Do I hate it? Not at all. I'm more apathetic to it.
It's a nice callback. Although I think they outsmart it too easily. He throws a rock at him, and that's how they figure it out. I'm like, there's parts of this movie where they're ridiculously well-tuned to what's going on, and then there's other parts where they're so oblivious with who they meet in a couple minutes. They're way too trusting.
So they move further in, and they see some strung-up carcasses, and Stan says, "It's like we're not the only things being hunted." We're hearing the clicking noises that we've gotten so familiar with the Predator as we've gone through this series. As they slowly walk further in, and they see more heads. Royce just kind of glances at Isabella as Nikolai touches one and it wakes up. Isabella says that they have to leave as Mombasa is taken out. So, goodbye, Mr. Ali. Guns are going off as the Predators appear. We're seeing the shoulder rifle go off as they tumble down a huge cliff into the bottom of a waterfall. So we're finally getting some Predator action.
We are, and I like that they have a camp. You know, we got a hunting camp. We get some action. We got some deaths. I'm upset that the Predator's not wounded at all, because even in the first one, the Predator takes a wound, but this one, fucking bulletproof until he's not, which bugs me a little bit. But at least we got something going on. And the fact that we have a camp, we got skulls, we got a Predator hanging up, we don't know exactly what's going on, and I like this.
We see a Predator bird, which I took as Laserbeak from Transformers. That's what I thought of.
Yeah.
We then see another type of Predator rise up and appear out of camouflage. Isabella accuses Royce of setting them up, and he says that he needed to know what they were up against. Some squabbling happens, and Royce says that Isabella knows what the thing that attacked them is, and she talks about the Guatemala jungle from the first film. So I had completely forgotten this, boys. I had completely forgotten that they actually do reference that first movie here.
They do, because she references 1987. She references where. So, yeah, there's knowledge there. I mean, that was something even in 2, you know, that they were going to make references to, you know, what happened there in that jungle. So I like that they're not acting like it didn't exist. It is an extension of the universe, not a rebootical.
I'm of two minds. It also goes to show that the cover-up attempt by Gary Busey was an abject failure, because apparently now it's just common knowledge. She's not even American, and yeah, she knows this, which is the question I have.
And I love that she knows all about how the first Predator was beat, but nothing about Mike Harrigan in L.A.
Yeah, and she also doesn't know, like, you know, if she knows that much, she should know all the Predator tactics.
Exactly. Roy says that whatever they are, they need to kill them all. We then see Hanzo, cigarette in mouth, as Stan says that when he gets home, he's going to do a ton of cocaine and rape a ton of bitches. Nikolai warns Edwin to stay away from Stan's, as Isabella proves she's still pissed at Royce by saying, "Fuck you." They talk about the difference between the two of them, and he says that there is no hunting like the hunting of a man, and they don't care what else they're after as long as they get their prey. They aim their guns, and Isabella says, "Why isn't the Predator coming?" Royce responds with, "He sees the traps." Royce tells Edwin that he figured out how he can be useful, and when we see Edwin again, it's of him out in the open and on the run. He's almost run down and yelling for them to shoot as Isabella thinks that she gets a shot in. They go to find the corpse from earlier, and Isabella says that she missed.
I hate the fact that she missed. To me, that's just it. You need it for the story, and you need it for what's about to happen in the story. It is unacceptable that she didn't hit that shot. A second bullet, fine, but they would not have allowed that. It's because it's a female that they think it's okay that she's the one amazing, you know, soldier in this that can't hit the fucking shot.
Voices are surrounding them as Royce turns around and finds what he thinks is a predator. Of course, he has to say, "What the fuck are you?" And when the mask is taken off, it's that of Lawrence fucking Fishburne, who's in, by my count, the 20th movie that we're reviewing of his resume. Might be a little
exaggerated. This is when my theater goes, "What the?"
You know, I criticized his performance in John Wick 2, but his performance here is, I mean, Ham doesn't even begin to describe it.
It's like he watched Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now and said, "I'm going to do a parody of this performance."
Well, don't forget, he was in Apocalypse Now.
No, I know.
Yeah.
But this reminds me of when Spielberg's War of the Worlds. I think the first third of that movie is really good, really suspenseful. It's got some genuine horror. And then Tim Robbins shows up, and I'm like, what the fuck is he doing? And he kills the movie. That's how I feel about Lawrence Fishburne in this. I think that's the apt comparison for me.
So seeing this in theater, and maybe even the first time that I saw it afterwards, I remember really defending and being like, man, I like that they did with Lawrence Fishburne, and you got somebody there, and it moved it along, and it showed something different. The last few times I've seen this movie, and especially for this one, this hits a brick wall when he shows up here. And the comparison to Apocalypse Now is very apt. I think calling it a parody is also very apt. He goes just so far trying to be crazy that it becomes comical. You know, the talking to him, it's just so unbelievable the way that it's pulled off. It oh man, you need to breathe in a film. You need to do something, but this hasn't had so much action that it deserves it. And if you got a way to show somebody that's been here, it's a good idea. This is done so poorly, and it takes all the momentum out of the film. It doesn't gain the momentum back until far too late. This movie is three different films, I feel like, put together, and this middle film is, oof. This is a cut scene that should have been left out. But unfortunately, you don't have the time to cut this out of the film.
You also have the problem of, okay, you've been here for what, 10 years?
Yeah, however many cycles, yeah.
And you're still that fat?
Yeah, what was the... Obviously, he ate well.
Yeah, like, he should be looking like Tom Hanks in Castaway.
As bad as this is, and I'm going to go ahead and say that word, I think this is bad. I think all the stuff with Lawrence Fishburne, as you said, Adam, it drags the film down. But I'm so glad we didn't get what Rodriguez wanted. He wanted this to be Arnold. He wanted this to be Dutch. God, am I glad that character didn't take this.
Yeah, because Arnold wouldn't have stood for this bullshit.
Would you bring a maid to set? Okay, never mind.
Nolan says that he's the one that got away, and you wouldn't want to fuck with me. They go to his hideout, and Nolan tells them to feel the vibe of the place. They continue moving with flashlights in hand as they find some sort of ship. Stans says, "What a shithole," and Nolan takes offense to this as he says he's just salvaging what he can, when he can, in order to live. He asks if they were dropped in as well, and Nolan says, "What a rush," Roadwire Hawk style. He mentions the heat signature that the Predators possess, and he says that he killed two, maybe three, over the years. He says that there's some sort of blood feud going on between the two species of Predators, and he says that he thinks he's been there 7, maybe 10 seasons. Oh, God, do I hate this part, boys. Ugh. All this exposition done by this... Look, I've said really good things about Lawrence Fishburne over the years on this podcast, but I have nothing good to say about him here. I just think he is literally sleepwalking through this role.
No, he's not sleepwalking. He's at that point where nobody would tell him no. Like, they're just letting him do his own thing, even though it's cartoonish in a bad way.
Did Antel have any control on this set, is what I'm asking, between all these over-the-top performances?
No.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the presence to do it. Like, you need a director that could actually do it, and this isn't the guy to do so. Mm-hmm. And I bet a producer wasn't on set to keep everybody in check either. Who's going to tell Lawrence Fishburne he's not going to do whatever he wants to do? It ain't this guy.
It just makes me wish that Rodriguez would have waited until his schedule was clear to do this. You know, I don't know if it would have been any better, honestly, but I feel like it could have been.
I mean, I think about this time. I mean, he wasn't doing Alita yet.
No, he was working on Machete at this time. It was so important to get that fucking film out there. Isabella says that he could have helped them, and Nolan says, "You kill them however you can, and they don't have many weaknesses." Stans asks, "How do they get out?" And Nolan says that there isn't an edge to preserve, and he says it never occurred to him to commandeer the spacecraft that's in their midst. He tells them to help themselves to some water before leaving, and they all look at one another. Stans has a picture out, and Edwin asks if that's his girlfriend, and Stans responds with, "It's his sister." Hanzo says that they've been doing this for a long time, and Hanzo says that the reason that he doesn't speak more is because then he talked too much. And we have more sexual tension between Royce and Isabella, which, by the way, these two have zero chemistry. As they talk about what she was doing when she was taken, she says that they are predators just like them. And Royce says that he's going after that ship and he's going to find out how to fly it from the guy strung up at the camp. Oh, my God. They smell smoke and Nolan is going off on Royce as Royce tells him goodbye to your little friend. Oh, God, we get a fucking Scarface reference here as well. Nolan says, "You're in my house, motherfucker." And Royce then calls in the cavalry. Nolan finally gets face to face with a predator and says, "What took you so goddamn long?" before his head just explodes in a CGI mess. The CGI in this movie is abysmal.
Because you got like this need to add some viscera, yeah. And this just red cloud of just explosion isn't something that I've seen since Jaws 3D. This is just a random just poof to the camera. It looks so bad.
Does that mean this is going to get a 6 as well?
Stay tuned.
I mean, this is the part I fall asleep at every single time I watch this movie. And it happened this time, too. I fell asleep during this. I had to rewind.
I feel like we should have seen that he has a compartment there with a hell of a lot of humans that he has killed over the seasons.
I feel like I'm not watching a totally different movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what Adam pointed out earlier, and I completely agree with him. This is three different movies, and... Meanwhile, the rest of the group continued trying to get out until Roy says that the predators are toying with them. He fires a flare and gets out, and I never know where the fuck they are, and that's a huge problem for me. And I've mentioned this a number of times, but McTiernan, so good at geography, so good at showing us where we are. Here, I have no idea where the fuck they are. They get out of the ship, and what is going on here?
When you don't have a topography of this planet, and on surface, that's okay. It's an alien planet, but there's no geography to be had. And it is troublesome, but on the same point, I'm on an alien planet, though it looks like every planet we've seen. So I don't know. I needed a little more foreign.
Well, Rodriguez compared this to Aliens. You know, of course, they're making the reference by calling it Predators, but I got more of an Alien 3 vibe in that film. I didn't know where they were either. You know, and they're going through hallways and everything else in that movie. I feel the same way here.
Yeah, well, the other problem is also when you're shooting at night, so it's already dark. But it's compounded by the fact that outside of the laser sights, I can't tell what's happening. Mm-hmm.
They roam more dark hallways until Edwin gets separated from the pack. He lights a flare and throws it as he lights another one. And then we hear the predator clicking sound again as Nikolai points them in the right direction. Edwin says that he lost them and begs to be let in as Nikolai turns up behind him and saves his ass. But Nikolai is shot down, and Edwin scurries away before the predator picks him up. Nikolai says something in Russian before grabbing a grenade and pulling the pin. They get out, and Stans is ecstatic, thinking that they killed the predator, but he's shot from behind, and Royce has a laser sight pointed right at him, and Edwin is able to take the attention away until he has his spine ripped completely out. So, Adam, as opposed to the first Alien vs. Predator, which you did kind of like, at least we're seeing some violent predator action here, right?
Yeah, and I want this kind of stuff, though it's the spike comes out nice and easy and quick. But I want this. I want to see an escalation. I want to see their weapons. I want to see some tactics. I want to see some predator violence. This is their planet now, motherfucker. This is what we should be getting. We need more of this, not Morpheus running around in a derelict spaceship.
Yeah, it's seeing like multiple classes of predator or like cross species. I thought this was an interesting invention rather than, because in Aliens, all the xenomorphs look the same outside of the queen. So at least they're making them more distinctive. But this is also the problem when you have guys in suits who don't bring a personality to the predator like Kevin Peter Hall did.
Great call. You know, I didn't mention it, but yeah, we have different people in the suits here. And as I mentioned in those first two Predator reviews, Kevin Peter Hall brought such a personality to that role. I'm not seeing any of that here. I think they're trying to do the characteristics. I think they're trying to do the movements. But yeah, it doesn't resonate with me either.
I like seeing them up until there's one Predator that I can't. The look of it is, I don't like. The rest of these, I'm happy to see multiple ones. I dig it. I like different armor styles. I wish we understood them a little more. I like that my favorite Swamp Thing is playing the classic Predator. Derek Mears, who's a badass Swamp Thing, for those that hadn't seen that HBO series, as classic Pred. So I like seeing these because we hadn't got that before when we got them in the ship of Predator 2. You know, they all stayed completely covered and it was pretty quick. More of this. You know, if you would have, I don't know, maybe reduce the humans and just show, to Matt's point, the different classes of predators going at it, you could have had something. Give me more. Give me more. Give me more.
Roy says that they need to head to the ship as the Predator is after them. They stop in a grass field and Hanzo is gearing up for his battle. So I guess this is like Sonny Landham in that first film. Hell, we even have the same music playing.
We do. Is this stupid? Yeah. Is it pretty cool? Yeah, it is. Though I guess the Predator respects ancient Japanese. Oh, you know what? Save that for a couple weeks. Some of this stuff gets paid off. I can't believe some of this stuff gets paid off, but hold up for an animated movie in 2 weeks, everybody. This is... on the bright side, like, I remember this being a one swipe kill in the movie theater. Seeing it now, I'm glad it at least goes on for a little bit, and I'm glad they both die. I do think he's paying tribute to some classic movie tropes.
This is why it was smart to have Billy die off screen.
Yeah, that's my feeling as well. I didn't expect it, and the Predator just keeps sidestepping Hanzo's attacks, but Hanzo slices him down. Meanwhile, Edwin is having a hard time as Roy says that he refuses to feel for any of the others and brags that he's alive. We see him come face to face with the Predator and tells him that he wants off this planet. He says he needs to take the ship and the Predator pushes him away. Meanwhile, Isabella, she's carrying Edwin as a Predator appears and she screams. We see another Predator gear up in front of him and the two Predators fight it out. Was not expecting Predator on Predator action, but here we are.
I wasn't either, and I'm glad we get it. This is... you also really get to see the size difference between these two. Yeah. Like, holy hell. You know, it does show that they're not all Predators are equal. Show me the monsters. Show me the weapons. Uh-huh. See Predator. I mean, this is me playing with two toys in my backyard of just rah, rah. I mean, this is, you know, it's what we didn't get with Alien versus Predator. Well, some of that I enjoyed. You guys really couldn't at all. But yeah, I do think this is kind of what the franchise needs to be.
See, this I find interesting that not all Predators are created equal. And you're sort of having different, almost tribalism. It's far more interesting than the actual human characters.
That's the weird part, isn't it?
Yeah, the things that can't speak are more interesting than all these humans.
Roy sees the ship start to take off as one Predator is firing away at the other, and they do some hand-to-hand combat. One is knocked down as the ship starts taking off. We see another Predator face, and Edwin tells Isabella, thank you. She says, when the time comes, she'll kill him quick. And just as she says this, Edwin slices her throat, revealing who he really is, telling her that she'll be able to experience... everything. Oh, what a stupid reveal this is.
This is the all Chris right. Hansen Predator film.
So
I waited an hour for that.
So here's the stupid fly in the ointment as far as Predator logic. So just because you're a serial killer makes it a challenge to hunt you? So if they dropped Hannibal Lecter off in the middle of this Predator island, they'd be able to get him.
And how would they... What were they just tracking this guy? Were they deciding to Clarice Starling this guy fucking around Chicago for a couple years to see what he was doing? I mean, it no sense other than, say, in a script, somebody went, ooh, what about just some mealy-mouth serial killer? It's fine in a book. It's fine in a video game where you can use different aspects of it. It is stupid when you're here on a planet of killers.
And the problem is also you already have a convicted serial killer with Walton Goggins.
Yeah, that's the other problem. Good call.
Unless the symbiote's going to come out of him right here, this is dumb as shit.
Yeah. I'm so glad, Adam, that you're feeling that way, because I was thinking the way this review was going, you're going to defend this every aspect, but you're having a big problem with this as well, huh?
No, I can understand why you write this. I also understand why you cut this. Because if Goggins would have just decided this was his opportunity to take her off to the woods, you get the exact same effect.
The Predator blows up the ship remotely as Edwin tells Isabel that you can see him for what he really is, a murderer and a freak. But here, he's not the monster, he's just normal. And this is when Royce appears behind Edwin, who turns around and says, you came back. He tells him to help them get out of there as he pushes Isabel up and says that the creatures have paralyzed her. Royce lays her down and says, you're too busy taking care of others. You didn't bother taking care of yourself. And when Edwin says that Royce is a good guy after all, he rolls around and says that he isn't, but he's fast as he drags Edwin behind him. And Edwin begs him to not kill him. So this is when we're trying to show Royce as being a badass. And Adrian Brody, I know you worked hard for this, but it's not working.
I could kick Topher Grace's ass.
Right.
Exactly. Like, this is not that. I'm not impressed.
I like a knife up through the chin up to the head. I think that's such a graphic, spine-chilling, you know, type of thought. He didn't beat anybody that I care about because I don't like Edwin. Putting him up as bait, I think that's a decent little idea. But call Alexander Graham Bell because this is telegraphed.
Oh my god. Boy, you're using a lot of lines today, sir. We see a predator weigh his options as he spots Edwin's body. He turns the body around until an explosion happens, and this is when Brody rides up shirtless and begs the predator to kill him.
Oh my god. All right, so one of the problems also with this movie, so many of the kills are just people exploding that they're not even that creative. Like, how many times can you watch a digital, like, blood fountain before you get bored of it? And I'm sorry, like, he even says, like, you're one ugly mother effer, some semblance of that line. Now he's doing the, come on, kill me now. I'm sitting here going, just stop it, please.
And watching the predator just take a bandolier of grenades to the chest and walk, just shrug it off like it's nothing. If you're going to do that, maybe show an image of a shield come up to block himself. But how is the predator not toast? He's not wearing armor, but he's unwounded until he needs to be wounded.
Roy sticks and moves for a bit until he hits him a good dozen times, but the predator rises up and spots him against a fire. He readies his pulse rifle as Roy says, oh shit, and runs out of the way. Predator throws him down and kicks him a few times. Meanwhile, Isabella, she shoots one and then gets an arrow to the chest for her efforts. Royce beats and slices the other predator until it's dead, and we even get a slow motion death blow, which I didn't see that coming here.
This is when we get the other predator that takes the mask, and this is when I can't stand the look of this other predator, because the mandibles are so giant that you might as well have made this predator's 3D. They are the size of the legs on a face hugger. They are these giant mandibles. They look like those fingers, just hands. I don't get it. I think they just went too far with the design. I'm glad we finally get some green blood being dropped, because there's not enough of that in this film for all the violence.
Yeah, they went digital with all the blood except the green stuff, apparently.
Yeah, well they got to discriminate.
Yeah. You
know? Red it's okay.
No, it's not easy green. Being green.
No.
Royce goes to Isabella and tells her he got it. They smile at one another, and Royce finally tells her his name. She says her name as well, so a formal introduction is finally had. We see
and then
them,
they fuck. No.
Yeah. We see them wake up as they're surrounded by everything that's not a ship, and then we hear Royce say, let's find a way to get off this fucking planet. As credits roll to the sweet stylings of Mustang Sally to a sequel that we never get.
Yeah, because they're setting up like there's more.
Yeah,
you get this drop coming right in as they reach the peak, which means how long in between before predators are like, refill the game preserve?
No, they just, I guess the predators went through the NFLPA and just grabbed a bunch of them because they did bad things.
Jesus. And that does it, boys, for Predators. Scale of 1 to 10. What do we get, Predators? Let's go to the fan. Adam Bunch, you go ahead, sir.
I'm always going to be down to see a Predator movie. It's a creature design that I think is one of the classic creature, classic monster, classic sci-fi designs. So I'm always going to see a Predator movie. I'm always going to be in line for an Alien movie. That's just something that's there. What you do once you get me in the theater, that's on you. And this movie, it kind of runs me through the gamut. And parts of it I am so engaged with, and parts of it I am so ripped out. The characters that they put in this thing are a hodgepodge that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And the ones that they kill off early are the ones I really wish got to stick around. The script is obviously written on the day at parts, and I'm betting there's a 4-hour cut of this film where they just keep freaking hobbits say they walk a lot in this film. That's just how much trudging there is through this damn forest. I'm glad every time some predators show up, but for a movie called Predators, there's not enough of them throughout. It's really not till we get to the final third of this film that we really see the multiples and what they can do and the why. Lawrence Fishburne's inclusion drops me out of the sky till I hit the ground, because it grinds this thing to a halt. And once he's gone, trying to get that momentum back is a fool's errand. It's a shame. It takes so much out of this film that it can't regain the good that it had. And it was going pretty well up until that point. I didn't love it, but I wasn't hating it. And that's just a different film. The characters that they populate, again, they're caricatures, but they're caricatures that don't gel with each other. And I think that's the shame. I've said it like a couple times, but I'm going to say it one more. This is a video game script that needed to be written for film, and it's not done well enough for that. This is maybe a comic book script that could be pretty freaking awesome, because you don't have a budget when you're drawing art, and you can do some amazing stuff with it. As it is, this is a ho-hum sequel, and it's a shame. It deserved better after such a long layoff, and to try to reinvigorate the franchise. Instead, all it did was kill the franchise again. And it's not bad, but it's not good. And It's a 5. It's a middling movie. You had some potential, and unfortunately, it overthinks itself into dullness when he really should have been exciting. And the worst part about this film is it's not exciting, and the action doesn't action itself enough. So 5 on 10 could be a hell of a lot worse, but it deserves to be better.
All right, 5 on 10 from the fan. Interesting score. Matt, what do you say, sir?
I guess we're going to start singing harmony because I'm not the super fan. And I thought this was just mediocre. I'm a little bit less forgiving because they had 20 years. And with the script taking all this long, you know, you have blueprints to show how to take franchises in different directions. And in a lot of ways, they kind of just made a cheap imitation of the first Predator, just with some slight altercations and more Predators. But sometimes more does not lead to superior product. I also think there's some horrendous miscasts and questionable decision-making when it comes to the very premise of Predators hunting the most dangerous people. Oh yeah, because Topher Grace is real dangerous, everybody. It's a decent time, though. Like, I don't think this is a slog to get through. I'm not like Garrett where I fall asleep at multiple instances, but I was kind of left disappointed, which is weird to say for something I had no expectations for. But you, like I said, you had 20 years and this was the best you could come up with. So I'm kind of ho-hum on Predators. So I'm gonna give it a 5 as well. Like, it's watchable, but I don't think anything is going to blow your socks off.
All right. A 5 from Mr. Goudreau. You know, in watching this movie, it's weird how it just kind of washes over me. When we watched the first Predator a couple weeks ago, I was so engaged by everything going on that screen. This, I'm not engaged, and I think that's why I fall asleep, because I'm not engaged by anybody on this screen, and when they do try to give us those characteristics, I just don't care. It's a weird way to feel about a film in that I am just so oblivious to any opinion. I don't hate it. I think it's, like Matt, I find it watchable, but I'm also not on the side of, ooh, I wanted more of it. So I am on the fence, but I'm going to go one lower than you guys, and this is the second series in a row I've given the third movie we reviewed in the series a 4, but that's how I feel about Predators. If I fall asleep each time I try watching it, there's something wrong with it. And I find Adrian Brody, unlike Danny Glover, who I found Danny Glover to at least be trying in the role that he had, I think Adrian Brody got in shape for it, but I don't think he was game for what Rodriguez and Intel were asking him to do. And everybody else he's surrounded by, I just don't care. There's no Jesse Ventura here. There's no Shane Black here. Hell, there's no Sonny Landham here. There's just caricatures that we've seen in the almost 20 years since that first sequel. So I'm at a 4 on 10. I find it to just drag to its final set of frames, and I'm glad they didn't continue with this, because I don't see if there's anywhere you could go with these two characters that, quite frankly, I did not give a shit about. So 4 on 10 for Predators. All right, Adam, well, you saying you're always game for a Predator film makes me extra excited for next week's film, because next week we are diving into The Predator, written and directed by Mr. Shane Black, who I know one person on this podcast is a huge fan of. You want to hear Matt slobber all over Shane Black? Go back to our first Lethal Weapon review. Matt, what are you expecting when we get to The Predator next week?
This was the only thing that could have excited me for a new Predator movie, was getting Shane Black to direct it. But in the back of my head, I also said, yeah, but people were excited when Ridley Scott came back to Alien. And I'm more forgiving of Prometheus than most people are. Not so much Covenant. So I was wondering, oh, sometimes maybe you have to be careful what you wish for. And also, I kind of wanted Shane Black to keep doing his own thing, because I really love The Nice Guys. I love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I loved Iron Man 3, but I know that's a very divisive movie. I kind of didn't want him to go back to the well, because I feel like he's at his best when he's doing his own thing. I know he had a hand in the first Predator, but it's strictly a hand. Like, it's not like he directed it or fully wrote the script. So I was wondering if he was also doing this just for the paycheck, which is never a good sign, even for the most creative people.
All right. That's Matt's thoughts. Adam, I say I'm excited for next week's podcast because I'm thinking this is the one that you have never finished, right?
I've never finished this film. I was semi-excited when I heard that Shane Black was coming to do it, especially because he was writing it and directing it. So I'm like, okay, a lot of times that works out. But 5 years after Iron Man 3, I still held a hell of a grudge against that sumbitch. We'll delve in that in a few years. And then I saw the trailer for this film. I have never had a trailer make me instantly say, I will not see that film. than I did in this film. If you thought that Royce was such an unprepared and unworthy adversary, you get Boyd fucking Holbrook as the lead of your film and Keegan-Michael Key? What? And then when I heard that what was like going to be the secret sauce to beating the Predator, and I was so turned off to this film beforehand that I didn't see it in theaters. As soon as it came to digital, I was like, let me give it a go. And I tried. And I've tried, and I've tried. And I will let you know the point that I have never got past once we discuss it next week. And I guess this time I'm going to have to, maybe, we'll see, get all the way through it. But yeah, this is the one, as the fan, that I've rage quit more than once.
And this is why it's so interesting doing this podcast, because you go back to our Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom show, Matt Prey short round after he spent years disliking that character, and now we're having Adam lead up to a review of a film that he's never finished. He has quote-unquote rage quit this after the series that he gave a 6 on 10 to Jaws 3.
And this, I will say, this is the second time I've had to do this for you sons of bitches, because I said I would never watch Alien C-Word again, and I got through that one again, so
I'm interested we'll to hear. But until next week, when we get to The Predator, guys, your podcast is awesome. Thank you, boys.
Why do you call it The Predator?
It's a nickname. You know, the data suggests that it tracks its prey, exploits weakness, seems to, well, enjoy it. Like a game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Please do not touch anything.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I'm sorry.
We're not dead yet.
What the hell are you?
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net. as we have tons of franchise reviews, such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I wouldn't wish that on a broke dick dog.
Instead of complaining, maybe I should help.
Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Do you think you could have found something bigger?
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Hey, you know what? Fuck this! This is bullshit, man! I want a gun!
Scheduling done by Matt.
It's something. Makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam.
What the fuck?
This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men and a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
My men are not expendable.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way.
please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Billy! Billy! The other day, I was going down to my girlfriend. I said to her, "Jeez, you got a big pussy. Jeez, you got a big pussy." She said, "Why did you say that twice?" And I said, "I didn't." See, it's because of the echo.
Predators, released released July 9th.
Which also made no sense because Grindhouse bombed, but I'm gonna make a movie that was literally a trailer in Grindhouse.
We probably need to do that series. Adam? No. Adam? And they wonder what they were chosen for. They go in further as it traps. Somebody was going to say something?
No. I'll save it for later, but the traps, it's all like.
Mombasa. Is Mombasa? Mombusa? How do you say that?
I keep saying Bufasa.
that's what I think of when I see that name,
yep,
too.
But it's Mombasa.
Mombasa, okay. Mombasa is.
I like that my favorite Swamp Thing is playing the classic Predator. Derek Mears, who's a badass Swamp Thing, for those that hadn't seen that HBO series, as classic Pred. So I like seeing these because we hadn't got that before when we got them in the ship of Predator 2. You know, they all stayed completely covered and it was pretty quick. More of this. You know, if you would have, I don't know, maybe reduce the humans and just show, to Matt's point, the different classes of Predators going at it, you could have had something. Give me more. Give me more. Give me more.
Mears playing two iconic roles 2 years in a row. The year before, he was in that Friday the 13th remake. So
But that's that version.
Yeah, you're right.
Which, you mean the best Friday the 13th?
I was going to say the one that Matt really likes. Go back to that review. Oh, wait, you can't. Roy says that.
But call Alexander Graham Bell because this is telegraphed.
Oh my God. Boy, you're using a lot of lines today, sir.
Yeah, sorry. That's a Mattism right there.
We see a Predator.
I keep my references to the last century.
Because you're younger.
We see a Predator weigh his options.